Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Project MedTech. I'm your host, Dwayne Mancini. If you enjoy this podcast, please do us a favor, subscribe, leave a review, and share on your network. As always, if you need to get a hold of the podcast for any reason, whether it be to get connected with a previous guest, recommend a future guest, or take advantage of our network, please email us at projectmedtechpodcast@gmail.com. My guests today are Zed Williamson and Clark Wiederhold. Zed is the president of Trackable Med, and Clark is the chief sales officer. In this episode of the podcast, we discuss Trackable Med, selling a medical device, challenges and tips, achieving regional market access, advice for startup companies, and we discuss their podcast, The Medical Sales Accelerator. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy my discussion with Zed Williamson and Clark Wiederhold.
Medical innovation starts with medical discussion. Talking about the future and what comes next with Project MedTech.
Clark, Zed, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Dwayne, thanks, appreciate you having us.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So I introduced both you. Zed, you're the CEO and founder of Trackable Med, and Clark, you're the chief sales officer. If you know, you guys want to discuss a little bit about introduce Trackable Med, what it is, and then maybe we'll talk about the history of it.
Sure. So Trackable Med is somewhat of a unique organization. Originally, I come from the advertising world, but I'm not a fan of it. I think it is totally riddled with a complete lack of accountability to actual outcomes. Media companies brag about audiences. Agencies brag about cute commercials or fancy logos. I really think this is, you know, me in a soapbox. I think when they started giving awards to advertising back in the 60s, they destroyed the industry. There was a lot of neuroscience before that. Copywriting was based on behavior. Now it's, you know, who can have the fanciest looking logo with colors that no one has seen before. So we are focused on a result, and we define a result as something that you can deposit into a bank account. The way we do that is by owning all aspects of response. So we'll run advertising rooted in neuroscience. We'll develop websites rooted in neuroscience. And then when patients call, we are actually the ones that take the call. And no surprise here, the script that they use is rooted in neuroscience. And so all of that comes together, gives us a ton of data to move fast. And we're about accelerating patients through the process of getting access to better healthcare, better options, get relief sooner, because a lot of patients don't know what technology is out there.
Yeah. Wow. That's so, this is a, well, we're hopping right in. This is a big problem that we see in you know, in the medical device industry all the time, right? I mean, you're hitting on it, is patients don't know the new products. And you talk about patient empowerment. We don't have that, right? It's not there at all.
You're spot on, Dwayne. And it's frankly, it's one of the reasons why I'm with the organization. I come from, or at least the last 10, 12 years of my career, were in the medical technology space and selling devices and working with reps and teams across different parts of the country. But at the end of the day, you were limited by the patient flow of any particular office or system. And I started working with Trackable Med through customers of mine, and I saw my numbers go up as an individual contributor. And then I saw other, you know, counterparts of mine and teams I was working with, their numbers go up when we had customers engage with this company. And it really all boils down to educating a patient population so that they are stirred in a way to take change, behavior change and action. Look, the providers still have to practice medicine. On the commercial side of, you know, the device and med tech, the reps and the sales teams still have to be engaging in indication discussions and opening up the indications so that the providers still understand and believe all of the appropriate patients they could and can treat. But when you marry those two together, it really starts to create acceleration within your own customer base as well as in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So can we talk a little bit about the details of how this works and how your organization works? I'm sure it's pretty, you know, straightforward. I don't know it enough. So I think a little bit of background, I'm sure the listeners have questions too. So maybe dive into that a little bit.
Sure. So there's a couple different scenarios. People work with us when they want an accelerated use of a therapy, a device with a specific patient population, whether that is from private medical practice or from the med tech side. And what we do is we dive into behavior behind decisions. Here's what's it's called the curse of knowledge. We all have it. When we know about something, we are really bad at communicating it. So you have this med tech company and they develop this real fancy technology that solves all kinds of problems. That actually makes them blind to behavior change because they get wrapped up in the information. I'll use an example. I'm not going to say the company, but I was invited to watch a presentation. This is about 9 years ago. And it was this big, there was like probably 30 patients in this room and it was for a procedure. And the physician pulled out the device because everyone was so excited about the device. And it looked like a samurai sword to the audience, right? People who understood said, oh, well, that's really interesting. But patients go, there is no way in hell you're getting anywhere close to me with that thing. And they wonder why no one books an appointment.
Right.
And so what we do is we take the human side from who's driving decisions. And I don't know if this is a secret, but patients drive decisions when they're empowered. So what we do is we spend some time with patients. We understand what their concerns, their barriers, what their understanding is, what frustrations they have as a patient. It's not just about the symptom that whatever disease state gives them. It's how it affects their life. We use that to create messaging that drives immediate response. What do I mean by immediate? If we use TV as an example, and we're in a state where we can record phone calls, you will hear the last 15 seconds of the commercial in the background on the phone of the caller the very first time the commercial ran in the city. That's how fast people will respond when you connect to them. We take that response, and then depending on the program that makes sense for the med tech company or the private practice physician, we may help a patient find a physician in their area that offers the solution. If we're working directly with a private practice, we may connect them directly. We may actually book the appointment. It all depends on what the scenario is. We are really Boy Scout-like when it comes to compliance and HIPAA. So that guides a lot of the angles you take. But it's the idea is let's help a patient get access to treatment faster. And in the end, what we're creating is a predictable model for growth. What does that mean? I mean, it's lots of syllables, but it can be kind of buzzwordy. So what it means is imagine you're a med tech company and you are saying, well, we're doing 1,000 procedures a month. I want to do 2,000 procedures a month starting in July. If we're working with you, we actually create the system for you to understand how to turn on that faucet from a time standpoint and predictable. So you can tell us, we want 2,000 procedures a month starting in July. And we go, okay. And we go do the things that creates that outcome predictably.
Okay. That's helpful. Makes a lot of sense. And I think most of the people listening are probably on that, you know, that half of what you do, right? They want to know how they're going to scale their company and whatnot. So I think that's really helpful. Clark, you have anything to add to that?
You know, just coming back to your first point or your first two points and putting those two dots together, it's really about us helping companies take ownership of patient education. Mm-hmm. And an educated patient is a motivated patient, right? So there's a lot of noise, be it good or bad, in the healthcare system. And there are patients in a lot of disease states, as one example, that think they have to live a certain way. And if they just by chance happen to bump into a provider of any particular specialty that offers a therapy that treats that in a way that they didn't think could be treated before, the patient, they're lucky enough to be introduced to it, We want to remove that chance as much as possible. Stir and educate a patient population that is being affected in any certain way and connect them with providers that believe what the company believes from a therapy perspective. And if appropriate, treat them that way. Mm-hmm. And when we do that, it's good for all parties involved. The patient gets treated more quickly in a more effective manner. The company is able to accelerate their own business and development and market agitation in a lot of ways. The healthcare system is now taking a lot of these disease states that have treated earlier and with a lot of these less or minimally invasive technologies, depending on what's happening, the long-term cost of the system is lower. So mm-hmm. if we can, you know, shrink the gap of that decision-making and the chance that, you know, if I'm a patient, my neighbor's recommendation to a specialist happens to be the right one, then we're doing good work.
Right. Okay. And Zed, you brought up a point earlier about communication, right? And I mean, I think as humans, like that's generally our number one problem, right? Is communication. Even if you're a good communicator, you have those lapses where you're not. And that is something that I became aware of about the importance of communication before I started business development. And my wife was the one who pointed out to me that sometimes I am just not a good communicator, right? She's like, you know, I know what I'm trying to say, but I'm not good at saying it, right? And I think that being sensitive to that helped me in my business development world, because it was understanding that, okay, I really need to communicate this effectively or it's going to be broken from the beginning, right? The whole process of us engaging is just going to be broken. So I think, your point is well taken, at least in my eyes, about being a better communicator. You know, when I asked you to talk about Trackable Med and I asked about the mission, it was pretty simple, right? It was connecting patients to the most effective treatment therapies faster. That resonated with me because I think that is anyone who's in the med tech field, that's your ultimate goal, right? And there are so many hurdles along the way that prevent that ultimate goal for companies. So I read that and I said, I love that mission. You know, I think that's a great mission. That should be everyone's mission. And you're that piece of the puzzle there. You want to comment further on that mission statement?
You know, I think we're in this weird scenario and this might rub some people the wrong way, but physicians, surgeons, they don't really have time to be problem solvers. They get to be solution providers. It's the only way it works. There is not enough time in the day to see the patients to get it done if you're truly going to be the problem solver. So as a solution provider, this is what drives me nuts about the industry. The problem solver is MedTech. MedTech solves problems. If we don't get that solution to physicians, then a patient's life is impacted by that. And it drives me nuts to think about, like I'll think about a parent or a grandparent and I'll find out after the fact that they had some procedure and I'll go, wait, no one told you about this other way of doing it? Well, no, that was never brought up. And you look and that physician doesn't do that procedure. So in other words, it doesn't exist in the mind of that patient. That I get fired up. That just drives me nuts that we live in a world where someone doesn't necessarily get the best options presented to them simply because of someone's choice of solutions. Would I love it if physicians could truly be problem solvers? Sure. We'd need about 10 million more physicians, right? There's just not enough time in the day. So I like that MedTech is taking the brunt of being the problem solver. What we need is we need that same level of innovation and getting fired up, and let's get it to more physicians so that it's part of their solutions that they pick from.
Mm-hmm. You know, I just interviewed Dr. Amy Baxter about a week ago, and by the time this episode is released, she will either be the one just before you or two before you. And she brought this up as well and just kind of talked about the exact same problem, right? Doctors aren't solving any issues. They're just, you know, deploying solutions. And we kind of talked about it, but she had the angle of the education of the doctors and how it's always 5 years behind. And she touched on a bigger problem of the 10 years to fully adopt a actual solution. And, you know, she kind of offered advice on how to close that gap of, hey, I have a product on the market and now it takes really 10 years for it to be adopted, you know, fully. She offered it from an educational standpoint, but not from a sales standpoint. So I'd be curious your guys' take on, you know, how do you close that gap if you're a, knowing it's there as a medical device company, how do you close that?
Excuse me, Dwayne.
Yeah.
You know, that's a multifaceted approach, but mm-hmm. there are, you know, in the space, there's a lot of pretty standard methods to, you know, commercialization and growing mm-hmm. market share. A lot of those are being questioned at the moment, frankly, post COVID or after the March of 2020. But a lot of it's due to access and just a different way of reps being able to communicate or time for the physicians. Mm-hmm. It's accelerating a lot of things like telemedicine and some other pieces that they've been around, but now the environment is right for it. I personally believe that, and we're seeing this in our own business, that more companies are starting to realize that they have to take ownership of patient flow to some degree and do that through patient education. So what does that mean? It means you either believe your therapy technology that initiates a therapy or whatever it may be is better for patients that are appropriate or not. And if you believe that, then let's let them know about it. And when you do that, when a company seizes or puts their hand on the throttle, so to speak, you create a lot of leverage for yourself in the marketplace. There's a couple of different things it does. One, you're able to now drive educated patient population towards providers that partner with you. And you can do that in a compliant manner and still give patients the choice of providers based in certain areas. At the same time, you're going to agitate marketplaces simply by creating loss aversion and lots of other things in the marketplace with providers that either aren't working with you yet or weren't ready to change. Now that's uncomfortable for everybody, but it speeds the process up of adoption and utilization. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest fears of every provider out there is losing patients to one of their counterparts or, you know, competitors in the marketplace, especially when it's a type of patient they want. So, you know, folks don't change. It doesn't matter what profession you're in, unless there's, you know, something to create some discomfort and thought of losing patients that you want or need in your practice to other people simply because the variety of reasons why physicians or, you know, their people, right, don't take up adoption at any particular time. You can help facilitate that. So I'm getting long-winded here and I'm going to kind of bring it back in. When we're working with organizations and we deploy some specific and tailored direct-to-consumer tools, I like to frame it up this way. Everybody calls us a marketing company because we use marketing and advertising tools. But when we're working with med techs, we're a sales organization that leverages marketing and advertising tools for them to disrupt the marketplace and speed up the process of adoption and utilization. The byproduct of that is more patients getting treated more quickly in an appropriate manner.
Okay, great. I like that. Okay, so obviously you guys are experts in selling medical device, medical technology. So I want to get to some questions that I had specifically targeted for you guys. Selling a medical device is hard, harder than people think. Right. I mean, I think, you know, we did a crossover episode. I talked about this on your episode. One of the biggest areas people underestimate is once this product gets to market, it is not going to sell itself. Right.
with the asterisk of, hey, I'm a PMA, I'm a disruptor. Hey, I'm a de novo, I'm a disruptor, right? They you'll still have to work for it, but it will sell itself for a certain extent. But selling a medical device is hard. It's underestimated. So talk about some challenges and then tips for med tech companies.
Sure. When you think about this is how I like to create a attack a problem. This is sometimes what we do is we assume the problem is the way, and we have to create a solution to come up with a new way. So I like to flip that. So how would you create an industry that was hard to sell? Let's say it was really easy and your goal was, I want to make it harder to sell a medical device. And I want adoption to take a lot longer. I want adoption to take 10 years. Imagine it was fast. If we flip that coin, it's amazing what you come up with to create those outcomes, right? You would deploy a sales approach that put marketing and sales against each other, where they're snarling at each other. Like, marketing's making us do this thing. And those salespeople never agree or appreciate all the work we do in marketing. You would do that on purpose if you wanted to slow down sales or make it harder. Well, guess what? That's what we do. That's what the industry does. So we are purposely making it slower. We are purposely making it harder by having that type of connection. So a tip would be bringing those things together so that, like Clark mentioned, it is a leveraged tool to increase sales. The purpose of the organization is to drive adoption. The purpose of marketing isn't to market, and the purpose of sales isn't to sale. It all has to come together. We want more physicians offering this as a solution to patients who need it. That's the goal for everybody in the organization. So I think that that's one thing. Another thing that you might do if you wanted to make selling harder and slow adoption is spend all your time being technical. You could purposely slow it down and purposely make it harder by being completely technical, walking in with a ton of data that says all the reasons why your device is better, and never actually connecting from a behavior standpoint of the physician you're trying to communicate with. Here's another way to slow it down. Train all the staff in a doctor's office that has taken your technology. Train all the staff in the details of that technology so that someone on the phone can talk to a patient about the diameter of the device and the efficacy and all that stuff. That would slow it down. That sounds crazy, but it's not. Patients don't want to hear that stuff. The way to fix that is you teach the staff of doctor's offices to connect with patients about what frustrates them, what's hard in their life, and is it time to fix it? So those are some ideas, Clark. I don't know if you have something else, or Dwayne, you want to?
Yeah, I was going to say real quick, and Clark, then you can go. Zed, I think that is things I haven't even thought about. I think that most people probably go in thinking, yes, they need to know everything about this product, and missing that connection piece it seems so like basic, but it probably happens so often I don't even think about that. I really, you just talked about that. That's new and novel to me. Here's a bad way.
Here's right. A news flash. There is not a human on this planet that makes a decision logically.
Right. Oh yeah. Now, that's,
we think we do.
Right.
But so what happens is the device rep goes, I know all this fancy stuff about this product. Let me puke it onto my potential customer. Mm-hmm. And then let me teach that customer to puke it onto a patient. And there's not a patient going, you know what? I would really like to fix this problem. If only I had a device that was 18 millimeters.
Mm-hmm.
That,
right.
That no one says that.
Yeah.
So yeah. Why would we talk to them about that? We make decisions emotionally. We mm-hmm. justify it logically so we feel good about ourselves. Jonathan yeah. Haidt, this guy came up with the concept of the elephant and the rider. It's been used in a couple of books, Switch by the Heath brothers. It's just a really smart way to think about how we decide. The elephant represents our limbic system, where emotions reside, where decisions are made. And the little guy on top, the rider, represents our prefrontal cortex, where logic is. Tell me, if you are someone riding an elephant, how much control do you really have if someone spooks that elephant?
Right.
but the rider's just going to go along, right? Mm-hmm. So that's how we're built. So if we keep going, it's like we're yelling at a guy on top of a pissed off elephant, and we're expecting the elephant to change direction.
Yeah. That's really good advice. That's a great analogy. And like Clark said on our podcast, you're the king of analogies. I think if you, there's a couple really good books that I've read, The Undoing Project, which was about, Amos Tversky and Danny Kahneman. Those are really good books about thinking like that. And I think there's some other ones by Malcolm Gladwell. I'm trying to look at my bookshelf because I know I've read these. Blink and The Social Leap is really good. These are all good books. I mean, I'm sure we can name 20 of them, but these are all good books. I encourage people to read, especially some of these people who have these startup companies or who are leading these startup companies. Understanding basic human interaction is something that, like, I didn't realize the importance of, because I just thought, like, oh, I know that, but we actually don't. And understanding it is really important. So that's great advice. Clark, what do you have for us?
Yeah, real quick, quite a few of the books and things that were just discussed are really built off of Daniel Kahneman's research with his partner, and his partner's name is escaping me at the moment, but
Amos Tversky.
Yes. And the work they did, it's really summed up in his book, Thinking Fast and Slow. It's dense, it's heavy thinking. But everything from prospect theory and framing and all of the ways in which we truly make decisions is laid out there and proven. And it's just been, it's been bored out as we can see more physiological evidence through more advanced neuroscience over the last 10 years. But as opposed to nerding out on that stuff, which I love, and you can't tell if Zed said it once, he said it twice. It's an underpinning of all of the things that we do here at Trackable Med. You know, a watch out would be, thinking about really, really, correct me if I'm wrong, but you've got a lot of founders, you've got a lot of investors, and there's a lot of early stage key contributors that listen to this podcast. Mm-hmm. Rethink the way in which you can go to market. And frankly, the industry, our industry from a marketing advertising perspective, has really soured a lot of people's notions of what's possible. And what I mean by that is we were consulting with a company 3 weeks ago, and we were doing some other things, but we really, after talking to the field, uncovered the need for some market disruption because they're stagnant. And we approached the executive team about that, and they had looked at direct to consumer, DTC, direct to patient, whatever you want to call it, in the past. And Dwayne, three years ago, they interviewed multiple firms, multiple companies, and they were told it was going to take 9 to 14 months, and over 850 to $1.2 million in range, just to come up with something that they could then try. There was no response, no evidence, no actual hard data as to whether or not they were achieving anything at that point. And so it was just too much of a risk. Mm-hmm. And frankly, it's nonsense. I mean, it makes my blood boil knowing that they don't have to do that. Mm-hmm. So rethink that. It's not what you have to do. It's not what's possible. We take a different approach and deploy very quickly and very fast in the grand scheme of things, ways to get direct feedback from the marketplace quickly and at small scale. And then we will, at that point, you really want to optimize what's happening, both the language for more response, as well as the way those tools are being used in the field in conjunction with the field team, right? So that you're maximizing agitation and utilization through these tools. And then when there's enough of that real-time data on a small scale, a couple of markets, right? That's when you can scale to the degree that the company has resources to scale and an appetite to scale that part of their offense. And so I think you asked for watch outs, and that's one of them.
Yep.
Rethink and throw away what you think is possible when it comes to patient education and, frankly, leveraging direct to consumer and your marketing team.
Okay. Yeah. And I want to talk about that patient education piece one, you know, as well. Two other topics that when we talked before and when I asked about some other topics you want to talk about that came up frequently, there's DTC. I'm assuming that's direct to consumer. And the halo effect. So let's talk about the halo effect first, and then let's kind of talk about DTC.
Would it surprise you to think about this scenario? A practice does some kind of campaign to educate patients in a market, and within 1 week of that campaign starting, a non-using surgeon reaches out to the local medical device rep and almost barks at them about getting trained as quick as possible because patients are asking them about a procedure.
No.
That's what the halo effect is. Okay. It is insane. It is massive. And it's purely based on behavior. I'll tell you, you know, Clark said about nerding out. I totally geek out. I tracked Daniel Kahneman down and had a back and forth email with him because
<No kidding.
laughs> I was so fired up about that book. And what I asked him specifically is what issue was there in regards to a surgeon who's been treating patients one way and why there's such friction to adopt something different. And our back and forth was him discussing the idea that with certain personality types, the idea of doing something new is taken the same by them as the admission that what they did before was wrong. So imagine you're a salesperson and you're saying, hey, this is better, you should do it. But that person is taking it. If I do this, that means everything I've done up until now was not as good as I thought it was. Mm-hmm. Powerful, right?
Yep.
Now, halo effect obliterates that because a patient is saying, hey, doc, can you do this procedure? How many surgeons do you know are really excited about answering that question? No, I haven't been trained on that.
Right.
There is not one. Mm-hmm. They may frame it as something else. They may say, I don't necessarily, there needs to be more data. There's the little guy on the elephant trying to justify the emotional. Right. But you get enough of that halo effect, which means this is not someone who's participating in a campaign. This is a specialty practice physician in the market where patients are being shaken awake about what they're suffering with. And we're giving them the power to make their own decisions. They take that to who they trust first. Okay. And when they do, the surgeons start barking at reps. Hey, you know what? We need to get me trained tomorrow. I need to set up a case next week. Yeah. And you know, how dare you?
Yeah. Yeah. That's good advice. You know, the other piece that, Dr. Amy Baxter added about this was, doctors are generally risk adverse, right? Yeah. You know, they don't want to, they know this works. They don't want to take any chances. Mm-hmm. And that's why they do it. So I like that this is a way to accelerate that adoption. I hopefully listeners by this point, if I'm understanding this, I hope they are as well, of you're giving great tips on how to reduce that, let's just say 10-year average of market adoption. Do you have anything to add, Clark, on the halo effect?
Yeah, I'm just going to keep coming back to the marriage between these tools that a company had can keep their hand on the throttle on and tools that they already invest in as well, which is their field-based team. And that job that is really hard, being out there pounding the pavement and getting in these oftentimes status quo busting conversations over time. Mm-hmm. And that marriage is, you take the same process Zed just outlined, except you add in some intentionality in the field to it. And so now you've got marketing, if you will, think of like the Air Force coming in, right, with air support, and you've got the ground forces or the special forces coming in on the ground, your field-based team coming in, intentionally having discussions about what the company is doing before it even launches in, say, that marketplace. We're in the greater New Orleans area, so I'll just say New Orleans, okay? So you have those discussions with not just the, let's say you have some friends and family customers, right? Some utilization, it may, or everybody, because you're literally breaking ground right now, and you let them know what's happening because of the data and the things that have already been laid in place at this point. And this is, the company believes this, we're looking to drive, patient interest, and we need places that would be willing to do it. I'm stumbling through that at the moment, but the field is now introducing what's happening, and then it becomes real and you're coming back, and it creates a lot of meaningful touch points for somebody in the field to be engaging in discussion that is way more powerful and beneficial than just talking about feature and benefit. You know, in one of my old roles, the 2-millimeter ball tip is what we used to joke around about, right? So it elevates those conversations. And again, this industry is used to tough, challenging conversations with providers to move the needle. This gives another layer to it and another reason to be having those challenging conversations.
Yeah.
What's been really fun to watch, Dwayne, is the effect of this in not just novel therapies, but also in spaces that are a little more mature and more commoditized. You know, everybody's looking for an edge and a way to not be driven down in the race to the bottom. And how do you do that? One way is you be the gatekeepers to an educated patient population that's motivated to find something better. Mm-hmm. So it's not a one size fits all. This only works for new therapies or only works in commoditized worlds. There's tailored approaches depending on the circumstance. But the beautiful part about it, me coming from, the sales world, is the ability to give marketing tools that they can now track and also, they can get the data that they're looking for, which is important. It's in our name, Trackable Med. But also the sales team has a tool that it's not just another initiative. It's something that they can take and leverage and use in everyday conversation across their marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. It's great advice. You guys have been dropping great advice the entire episode so far. This is awesome. Let's talk about direct to consumer. This can come up a few different areas, right? It's MedTechs don't know what's possible with DTC. There's a stepped approach to DTC. So talk a little bit about that.
Sure.
Yeah.
I want your listeners to pretend that it's 6 weeks from now and they have a successful DTC campaign running. That is possible. Doesn't matter where they are today, 6 weeks from now, a successful DTC campaign driving patient demand to people who utilize their therapy and to people driving patients to people who don't. So that is the first thing that we need to get people to understand. You do not need to wait. Marketing companies that tell you they need to do 6 months of research, they just built a bad business model and you're funding it. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It can be completely built quickly. You can understand behavior very quickly. And behavior, however irrational, is predictable. There's actually a book called Predictable Irrationality. it is true. So when it comes to DTC and the stepped approach is what we use, we launch a campaign. We can, let's say we chat with the company, get a scope of work out. In 2 weeks, the campaign starts. It's going to be small, but it's going to be a learning campaign. We're going to take the data from that and it'll inform the next day. And that keeps stacking on top of each other. And within 3 to 4 weeks after that, you have something that you can put your pedal to the metal if you want, or design a very specific outcome that you're looking for as a company. You do not need to waste 6 months on research. The fact that you have a device that solves a problem, I think you probably did enough research by now. This is time to act. This is take action, which is really uncomfortable for people in marketing. It just is. Marketing has been taught, no, let's do focus groups. By the way, we will never do a focus group. Anybody who charges you to do a focus group, I might piss people off. I think they're stealing from you. Because I know I could get a focus group to say anything I wanted based on how I asked the questions. So that is an issue to me. So I think we should be out in the field uncovering real information, using that, and moving forward with a campaign that drives the results you're looking for. There's different ways to do this. And a lot of this has to come down, you know, comes down to economics. It could be sales team size. It could be what kind of adoption exists today. You would attack something differently if no one's heard of you compared to if you've been in the marketplace. But all of that is very actionable and it's fast. So 6 weeks from now, anyone listening to this podcast could have a working, successful DTC campaign. And I am defining success, if you remember how we defined result in the beginning, as something you can deposit into the bank account. You can generate sales very quickly.
Yeah. Clark, anything to add?
You know, the one thing that's just rummaging around my head from one of your earlier questions, Dwayne, that we didn't really talk about is I read a lot of thought and opinion out there around consumer campaigns and things of that nature in this space, as people are trying to figure it out, is really a lot of the work out there, discussion is built around digital only. And it's flawed thinking. It has the best of intention because you can do so many very targeted things digitally. Trust me, we do it every day. We're a full-scale digital agency as well, right? Mm-hmm. It's one of the tools we have in our tool belt. I would just encourage everybody to not limit what they think the tool should be, because it really depends on the time of stage in that particular approach and what the need is. Mm-hmm. It's almost like thinking about the searching for a financial advisor and wanting to make sure you're with a fiduciary, right? So that you're not getting a suitable approach, but you're getting the best approach for you. You know, if you engage with anybody, make sure you're engaging with a company and a firm that has zero opinion about what tool they use and really only cares about the result that it's driving. That we see that a lot. It creates a lot of bad decision making, and it's out of blind spots because folks just don't realize that, because there's a lot of sexy talk about what can be done either on broadcast side or on digital, or, you know, strictly through search engine optimization and Facebook. You know, there's a lot of really cool tools. They don't all achieve the same thing. They're all going to work. They're all going to work to a certain degree. It's a matter of aligning the right tool with the right desired result.
Yep. Okay.
And the accountability to it. You know, the thing that drives me nuts about this industry is the reason why I make you do research that you pay for, because now all my behavior, all the things I'm going to do as a company is because of the research you paid for. So when it doesn't work, I get to blame your research and charge you to do more research. Mm-hmm. That drives me nuts.
Right.
I just get fired up that's the marketing world, mm-hmm. You know, so it should be successful. There's no, you know, there was a Cologuard is a really well-known successful DTC campaign that's, wow, everyone's going, gosh, this is really going well. Really? You get someone to avoid a colonoscopy, you're surprised that campaign went well? You did a bunch of research and spent millions of dollars before you launched?
Mm-hmm.
6 weeks, you would have accelerated a lot faster. Yeah. Right. People don't want to have a colonoscopy. They'd rather take care of it in a box.
Right.
You know, the campaign worked, but it shouldn't have been a surprise.
Right. You're not the first one to bring up Cologuard. This was episode 15, and his name was, Alberto Chan. And he brought it up he kind of mentioned the same thing. And he brought it up from getting it on private insurance, companies who own their own insurance. And once it got on there, it kind of accelerated even more. But he pretty much said the same thing about the marketing campaign. So it's really interesting that I love when this happens, when someone, there's repeat, you know, things that are brought up. So yeah, that's a really good point and really interesting. Okay. Well, let's wrap this up. Is there any parting words of wisdom from either one of you that you'd like to leave the listeners with?
I just think, you know, be mindful of your own opinion about your device, and realize that patients have life problems they're trying to solve. And if your team can wrap their head around those life problems and then wrap their head around the life problems of the physicians that you want to adopt your technology, you're going to be a better communicator. You're going to get more people to be on your side. And it's cool to think that your technology is great. That's what gives you the confidence to move forward. You know, being an entrepreneur is someone who can see an idea, be so passionate about it that you take the punches, you take the kicks, and you keep on pushing. Just make sure that that passion doesn't make you blind to bringing this to market in the way that creates massive adoption extraordinarily fast. You don't have to play by the rules that's been created by an industry that's purposely held its back, held itself back on accident, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. Right. And you talked about it earlier. Okay, great. Clark.
Yeah. Kind of in that token. I mean, I love this community because of the innovation and really the strive to do big things and push the uncomfortable status quo discussions, whether it's, you know, an actual sales discussion or in the marketplace, which happens very often. So what's been encouraging is watching so many really talented leaders in the space look at challenges differently, specifically since March of 2020. And just kudos to that. And we've been in a lot of really interesting discussions that weren't taking place before that. So just continue to look at the challenges that we're facing to bring, you know, better therapies to the marketplace more cost effectively and quicker, and just keep driving innovation. It's fun to watch and it's fun to be a part of.
Yeah. And I'll say this about the medical device med tech community. It's an amazing community to be a part of, right? It's some of the smartest people you ever meet. Absolutely. Everyone has the same goal. Right. And it's the mission statement you talked about, right? It's getting patients therapies quicker. But it is, and this podcast isn't designed to scare people away from it, right? It's designed to say, hey, here's where the gaps are. Just know where the hurdles are. You're walking through a dark room and there's a bunch of stuff in your way. We're just trying to help you navigate through that, right? Because you don't know where it is. But we do, because we've been through it, right? In all our different areas. But it is the smartest people. It is a challenge, right? I mean, there's so many things about the medical device area that are hard. Finding money is hard, right? Yeah. You have to find investors who are willing to say, I know I'm not going to get my money out of this for 5 to 10 years, and that's okay. I know you're not going to generate revenue for 5 to 10 years, and that's okay. Convincing doctors and other, you know, healthcare providers that are taught one way to do something another way is hard. Going through regulatory is hard. Designing a clinical trial is hard. Getting your medical device covered on reimbursement is hard, right? There's so many things that are hard about this, and that's what drives the smartest people who are up for the challenge. So I like to get that out there sometimes that, you know, this is just a truly extraordinary industry with some of the brightest minds in the world, and it's awesome to see every day. So, best place to get a hold of both of you. Both your names are going to be in the title of the podcast, right? I don't hide what the podcast is. It's the company you're with. So people can go and Google Trackable Med and go to your website. You can look up both Clark and Zed on LinkedIn, connect with them. Is LinkedIn kind of the best avenue for people to reach out if they're interested in things, the website? Sure. Okay, great. Okay. Well, look, Zed, Clark, I really appreciate your time. Hang on for 1 second. We're going to do a quick discussion offline. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thanks, Dwayne. I'll close with this. You know, don't hesitate to reach out to either one of us on LinkedIn. We're not going to be a fit for everybody, but we have pretty regular discussions where we're able to identify those and at least pass on to, you know, the right direction. So
yeah,
love to help. Look us up. Let us know what your issues are.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you need anything from the podcast, you can always contact us at projectmedtechpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening and have a great day.